So last week we began talking about our series based on a book by Adam Hamilton, Enough: Discovering Joy Through Simplicity and Generosity. And we talked about some conflicting dreams out there in the world. Our dream that hopefully is God's dream for who we are and who we are called to be, and the American dream, which, as it turns out, is more like a nightmare. The American dream that promises us that instant gratification, that the accumulation of wealth or of stuff will make us happy and is somehow sustainable. And we find that not only is it not sustainable with disastrous consequences for our economy globally, nationally, locally, and personally, but that it doesn't actually make us happy. Some of us might feel like we are moving more and more in the wrong direction in the pursuit of this dream that is really a nightmare, that we are further in debt each year, that we are further away from the vision that we're called to. Or some of us might feel that we're making progress, that we have in part rejected that vision of the world, that worldview, and that we're chipping away at debt, we are building up savings, we're feeling better each year, and that's good. But to some extent, we've all bought in to this dream turned nightmare, to this concept that the world is about doing better than our parents and our neighbors, that it is about the accumulation of stuff, of wealth, and the instant gratification of any desire that we have. In a sense, we can all, at some point or another, resonate a little bit with the younger son in this story from the Gospel of Luke. We all have a little bit of the prodigal child inside us. You see, the father in this story had an inheritance for his two children. And he had accumulated, not to hoard, but it seems to share, an estate with his sons that was supposed to provide for their livelihood for the rest of their lives. Okay, there are no 401ks or Social Security plans in ancient Israel. This is his retirement plan and his sons' retirement plans. This is everything they have, and it should be enough to sustain them and to help them live and flourish and grow, not only for the remainder of the father's life, but for the lives of each of his children and whatever families they might have, and so on and so on and so on. And so the young son sees all this and doesn't care. That's all well and good. But I'd really like that money now. I'd really like to spend it all right now, or at least have it all right now. And so he goes to his father and he asks for it, and the father says, sure, here you go. And off he goes to a foreign country where he spends all the money on wild living, which we're just meant to imagine what in the world he could possibly do with a lifetime supply of inheritance in a few years in a foreign country, but it's got to be great. He's like, you know, the college kid who just got his parents' credit card, and he just goes hog wild. He goes nuts. He has the time of his life. And then, as always happens, famine strikes. Right? This happens in our lives too, right? This always happens. Something happens. A huge medical problem that generates an enormous medical bill. A friend who is desperately in trouble or a family member in trouble that we really want to help. Complete and utter totaling or destruction of a vehicle, which is our means of transportation to work or to the grocery store or wherever it is we need to go, and we find ourselves needing a sum of money all at once, and we realize the famine has hit. Something has happened, and the resources that we were supposed to have been saving aren't there, and all of a sudden, we are in trouble. And that's what this son realizes. He has spent all of this money having a good time. He's had the time of his life, and it was fun while he was doing it, but all of a sudden, there's a famine, and he doesn't have a scrap of money left. And so he, again, buys into the dream, and he digs his heels in, and he tries to work for somebody else to get back the money that he was supposed to have been saving for himself, and he works and works and works and never gets ahead, and we resonate with that sometimes too. And then he comes to his senses and realizes that he had the wrong vision, or in fact, he had no vision at all. That was really his problem. He didn't have a plan for his future. You know, people ask you, you know, where do you want to be in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or where, next year? He didn't have a plan for that. So How could he save for anything when he didn't really know what his life was about? He didn't know what he wanted to do, who he wanted to be, how he wanted to live. And so instead, he blew all the money on the short-term stuff, and he had nothing left. In the end, it didn't help him at all, and when disaster struck, there was nothing. I mean, we find this, like, you know, even in our own lives, it seems that it's harder and harder and harder to save up or to plan ahead. I feel like, you know, the more money I make, I don't have any extra, you know? It's like I make more money this year than I made last year, but how come I don't have any more? Because the more money we make, the more money we spend. It just all goes somewhere. It's like we don't even know. We're not planning ahead for the future, and it hasn't made us happy. Now, Reverend Hamilton says that there are basically two things that we do that are the biggest wastes, biggest drains of our money. And curiously, or not, because he is a good Methodist, both of them, I think, have to do sometimes with food, at least a little bit. So the first thing that we do that is a drain on our resources is impulse buying. Okay, now there's some good examples of that. You know, when you see something on sale that you don't really need, and you're like, oh, but I gotta have it right now because it's on sale, which is, of course, why companies have sales. That's the whole point, is to make you think you need it right now because it's on sale. I fell victim to this just like 2 days ago at this enormous bookstore, 18 miles of books in New York City. And, you know, I have a stack about 2.5 feet tall on my bedside table of books that I'm reading or supposed to be reading or have started or am thinking of starting. And it really would be good to finish that stack or at least cut it down a little bit before I added books to the pile of it, but I'm awful. And so I go into this bookstore and, you know, there are 18 miles of books. Of course I'm gonna find a few. And I found a few that I was interested in legitimately, and they were half price. I mean, I didn't need them. I have plenty of books, but they were half price. So I bought them. I have two, just two, to add to my stack so that it's just a little bit higher. I didn't really need them, but on impulse, because they looked good and they were half price, I went, oh, well, I better jump at this deal. When am I ever going to see them half price again? Next time I go to a bookstore that has them for half price. But I bought them. But the biggest example of when we do this is when we go to the grocery store hungry, right? Not planning ahead. Total lack of planning ahead and making a list and buying only the things on the list, right? That's the best way to do that, to make sure we get what we need and only what we need. And lack of planning ahead about what we're trying to make. So, you know, I get home, and I'm trying to make something, and I realize I'm out of eggs. So I'm going to go to the grocery store for eggs. And so off I go in my car. Now, I was making dinner or whatever, and so I haven't eaten it yet, so I'm a little hungry. So I go into the grocery store looking for a dozen eggs. But, you know, then there's something else that strikes my interest. There's some chips, and there's some juice, and there's some vegetables, and there's, you know, some fruits, and there's some, oh, you know, the cereal is on sale, 2 for the price of 1 this week, and I can't remember if I have enough boxes of Cheerios at home, so I might as well get a couple of those. They're not going to go bad. And all of a sudden, I get to the register, and I realize that I have a $60 dozen of eggs. Because of all the other things that I piled into the cart, right? Because I was shopping while I was hungry, and I wasn't planning ahead. So it has to do with, again, that lack of just planning ahead, being ready, being prepared. Or the second thing that Reverend Hamilton says we do, that we spend far too much money on, which also has to do with food and also has to do with lack of planning, and that is eating out, eating food that other people have prepared, and that we're paying now for them to prepare and serve to us, so we've paid 4 times as much for it than we would have if we had made it at home, presuming we had all the ingredients and then didn't run to the store to spend $60 on eggs. And we've paid somebody else to do it again, usually in my case, because it's 5:30 and I didn't think of anything for dinner, and now I'm hungry, and I open the cupboard and say, what can I make with all of that? Nothing. Nothing I feel like. Oh, it's gonna take 40 minutes. Quick, call the pizza guy. Which is also going to take 40 minutes, but it doesn't feel like 40 minutes because somebody else is doing it. And before you know it, we're spending way too much money on food that's probably less healthy and way more expensive than it needs to be. So he says those are the two reasons why we tend to spend too much money. And again, in both cases, it tends to do with the instant gratification of what we think we want, and in some cases being ruled by our stomachs rather than our heads. And not planning ahead, not thinking ahead. In the end, it hasn't made us any happier because we haven't had a vision, a long-range plan, a goal. Now, Adam Hamilton says this so well that I'm just going to begin to quote him very liberally here from the book Enough. He says that all of this is about understanding and discovering and discerning and then articulating our life purpose. He says, our purpose in life is not our own pleasure, as the prodigal son thought. The playwright George Bernard Shaw said it this way in the Epistle Dedicatory in Man and Superman. So now this is Shaw quoted by Hamilton, quoted by Clark. This is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one, the being thoroughly worn out before you are thrown on the scrap heap, the being a force of nature, instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. Ouch. Hamilton writes, we were created to care for God's creation. We were created to love God and to love our neighbors as ourselves. We were created to care for our families and those in need. We were created to glorify God, to seek justice, and to do mercy. To be a Christian is to follow Jesus Christ and to seek to do his will in our lives. It is to say, here I am, all of me, I'm yours. Put me to work, help me to serve, use me to accomplish your work. Now, if this is our life purpose, then our money and possessions should be devoted to helping us fulfill this calling. We're to use our resources to help care for our families and others, to serve Christ and the world through the church, missions, and everyday opportunities. We are blessed to be a blessing. A bit later, he writes, money should never be an end in itself. Rather, it should be a means for accomplishing an end, specifically for accomplishing our life purpose. Money itself is not bad. It is not the root of all evil. According to the Bible, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. The problem is in how we view or value money. In and of itself, money can be neither good, can be either good or bad, depending on how it is used. Money is merely a tool to be used to accomplish the greater purposes God has for our lives. And I like this part because I get this question a lot, which is, you know, I'm trying to take care of my family. I'm trying to provide for children, for parents, for loved ones. Is that a bad thing? And Hamilton says, no. He says, part of my own life purpose is to care for my wife and children, and I use a portion of my income to do that. Another part of my life purpose is to further God's kingdom through the local church, and my tithes and offerings help me do that. I am also called to help the poor and change the world, and I look to my income as an opportunity to do that too. In these ways, I use money to accomplish God's purposes in my life. Each of us is called to be a blessing to others. We have a life purpose that is greater than our own self-interests, and how we spend our God-given resources reflects our understanding of and commitment to this life purpose or mission. So we begin by asking ourselves, what is our life purpose? For me, Ariana has recently begun to say that she wants to be two things when she grows up. She's very excited that she doesn't have to pick just one. But she wants to be two things when she grows up. She wants to be a mama, and she wants to be a pastor. Now, I do spend part of my time trying to convince her that there are other worthy pursuits out there, because those are two of the most challenging, draining sometimes, very, very difficult things that I've ever had to do with my life. I love them, but wow, are those some challenging callings? And we joke around a little bit about that, and oh, please, you know, tell her she wants to be a lawyer, right? You know, somebody in this family has to make money or something. But the truth of the matter is that part of that makes me uncomfortable because it's such an incredible pressure on me. Because now I realize that part of my life purpose, part of what I want to be, is I want to be the woman that my daughter thinks she's looking up to. I want to be the example that she sees. You know, nobody looks up to somebody and goes, you know, I wish I really, when I grow up, have a lot of debt. That'd be great, you know? when I grow up, I want to not really have anything in my savings account at all. You know, when I grow up, I hope that I can't help other people when they're in need because I don't have enough to go around just, you know, for myself and my family and the needs that we have, that I'm not able to be generous. No. I mean, financially, when it comes to those things, I want to be an example to her and to others of what it means to live a life with my priorities straight. I want to be the kind of person that at the end of my life people point to and say, now that was a woman who loved God. And love God's people, and you could tell. You could tell by just the stuff that she did. That's the kind of person I want to be. I want to be the person that my daughter thinks I am. I don't know where she's getting this vision. I don't know who she's actually looking at, but I do. I want to be the person she thinks I am. I want to be worthy of the respect and the admiration that she is showing me in saying she wants to pursue what I have pursued when she grows up. Now, that's no small task. That's no small task at all. But it's a starting place for me to know who I want to be. In your bulletin, there are a couple of worksheets that are just for your resources, for stuff that you can bring home, you can use, you cannot. But you'll notice that at the top of the one that says my life and financial goals, the very first question is, how would you define or describe your life purpose? Because like the prodigal son, if we don't have a life purpose, if we don't know who we want to be, then how can we make decisions that bring us closer to that? How can we use the resources that God gives us, and not just money resources, but our time, our energy, our passion for things, our talents, how can we use that to draw closer to the purpose we believe God's calling us to if we don't know what the purpose is that God's calling us to? And, you know, some of the questions are going to be more and less relevant depending on where you are, you know, like long-term financial goals, 5 years to retirement might vary for folks who have less than 5 years to retirement or are on the other side of retirement. But, you know, the way in which then the rest of that worksheet is helpful has to do with knowing what you would define as your life purpose, right? Reverend Hamilton describes his as taking care of his family, serving God by furthering the kingdom through the work of the local church, and helping the poor and those in need. And so then he's able to look at his goals in terms of his finances and ask, how am I helping achieve these purposes? He suggests that in all these categories that at least one goal, right, is a spiritual goal, relates directly to our spirituality. So for example, again, if one of the things I want to do is to be able to help people when they are in need, to be able to have some money set aside so that I'm not, when there is an emergency that strikes, I'm not scrambling, you know, those things are provided for. And then when somebody says, I have a dream, I have a vision, I'm going on a mission trip, I need a little help to keep my family more stable, I can just say, here, let me help that, let me support that. That's one of the things I want to be able to do. And so then both as in terms of just seeking to be a generous person as a spiritual goal and seeking to be more stable financially, that becomes perhaps one of my bigger goals in achieving my life purpose, because that's the kind of person I want my daughter to look up to. And so then short-term goals and long-term goals to build savings, to be in a place where I can do that. Or if one of my goals is to challenge myself and our as a family, when we give to the church, we think about how do we really communicate our priorities and really push myself. If I'm given just what's comfortable for me, then I haven't pushed myself to trust God quite as much. And so that's one of my personal spiritual goals, is to challenge myself. And so what are the financial goals or the practical goals that help me be in that place? And so that's a tool for that. And on the other side is a budget worksheet that comes from Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. And he's also the person, I think, that does its like Financial Peace Institute or something like that. There's some budgeting help, because budgets are one of those short-term tools, short-term goals that help with a long-term approach toward the vision and the mission. In an envelope that you should have received on your way in, or if not on your way out, and if you have not, please ask in the back, you're going to find a little business card-sized reminder of some 6 key financial principles to help discover joy through simplicity and generosity. I made them business card size so they can go in wallets if need be, next to those other pesky plastic cards, maybe as a reminder. But very basically, this is an encouragement with some biblical reflection, perhaps as a devotion or a study, about putting God first in living and giving, preparing a plan or a budget, simplifying and trying to live below our means rather than above them in wild living, beginning savings for emergencies and for other things that we want to work toward, paying off debt, which the folks in Plainfield found amusing, that it says pay off credit card debt, and then quotes Proverbs 22:7. So apparently there were credit cards in ancient Middle East, but it actually says that those who owe money are slaves to the money lenders, which does speak very much to the way the credit card industry tends to work sometimes. And then to practice long-range savings, not just for immediate needs, but for things like retirement and long-range goals. And so we see from those principles some ways to help us move toward our purpose. But all of this is really interesting practical information that to me doesn't matter a hill of beans if we don't know who we are and what our vision is. And this is just as true of us as individuals as it is of organizations. I was with my friend for a couple days, and we were talking about our respective organizations and what our dreams would be or our visions would be for those respective organizations. Now, she works for one of the largest nonprofit organizations in the country, the American Cancer Society, and she does fundraising and online giving for them. And what she would like to see is for the American Cancer Society to have a $10 billion a year budget. And with that, she would like to you know, help move the American Cancer Society to a place where it can treat cancer, view cancer as a global disease, and can address questions of prevention and treatment and cure from a global perspective, rather than kind of a more case-by-case, piecemeal basis. Can ask questions like, how do we get treatment to people who are miles and miles and miles from a hospital or an adequate healthcare provider? How do we get medicine that right now requires incredible levels of sanitation, of hydration, out into the desert or places where clean water is just nearly impossible to come by? And so her vision, right, for an organization in which she's not yet high enough up in to push it in that direction, but with a vision like that, I say yet as the operative word. Because with a vision like that, then when she wants to make decisions about the direction that she sees this organization going and her part in it, she's asking herself, how do we begin to move in this direction where we see cancer in a new way and we address and treat and prevent and hopefully one day cure cancer from a global perspective? And with that vision, then when she starts to work, she has a purpose. She knows where she's going. She knows where she wants the organization to go. And she's like, you know, so what about you? And I was like, well, that's no $10 billion. But I'd love for a church to have about $30,000 extra, $40,000, something, somewhere in that range a year. And with that, I would work toward housing. Because see, for me, my vision is about what's underneath, is about finding what is the greatest need in a community and then asking how do the people of God address that need. And for me, I have this thing about housing. And so I would, you know, maybe that would mean adopting a family or individual and just staying with that person or group of people and helping them be sustainable and build to a place where they can be comfortable and confident and then finding someone else to help. Or maybe in doing that we discover, you know what? The problem is that there isn't housing to be had and we need to be advocating for or getting out our hammers and nails and building the space, the affordable, clean housing that people need. But the question is, you know, what would my dream be? What would my vision be for my organization? What is our vision for our organization, for the church? We have a wonderful one. We're called to be a free and fearless community where people experience God, grow in love in Jesus, and live in spirit-filled service to the world. That's a rough paraphrase. It's very close. You can check me on our website. But it's very close, and that's our vision. So how are we a place where people are experiencing God, growing, deepening their love of Jesus, and their love of God, and then living in service, spirit-filled service to the community? And when we have that vision, then every decision we make, right, should be asking that question. What are the goals that are moving us toward that vision? I have a vision of this church. I honestly, you know, I'm a little crazy sometimes. But I have a vision of this church that this is the most vibrant, faithful, relevant community of Christian believers in Central Vermont. That's what I believe. That's where I see us. That we take what we experience from God and what we believe about how we live that out in the world, and then we do it, man. We just go out there and we do it. We are helping transform this community because of the love of God that we've experienced and that flows through us into the world. Crazy, right? I mean, just absolutely crazy. That's what I believe. That's what I see. That's the vision, the purpose that I think God has called us to. When we experience God, when we deepen that growth and that commitment, and then we go out and we are in spirit-filled service. And so my question, every time we make a decision, every time we plan as a group, is how are we moving in that direction? Because that's what I see. And by gum, that's where I want to be. So how do we get in that direction? We do the same thing with our personal lives as we do with our church life, because it's all a spiritual question. It's all a deeply prayerful question. Who is God calling us to be? Adam Hamilton asks, do you admire more those who live extravagantly or those who give extravagantly? Or I might ask myself, do I want my daughter to look up to those who live extravagantly or those who give extravagantly? Do we want the world around us to see a church that has somehow lived its life extravagantly? Or a church that gives to a community in an extravagant, vibrant way with our service in the world? The question is, what is our vision as a people, as individuals, to what is God calling us? And then we can take these tools, these financial planning tools, and we can take the tools of the financial resources that we have, and of our time, and our talent, and our passion, and our energy, and we use those tools to accomplish the vision that we believe to be God-inspired. But until we are striving for a vision, we are wandering aimlessly. We are like prodigals. I have spent, it turns out, my life misusing the word prodigal. It doesn't mean lost and found or wandering. I thought it did. That's always how I've used it. I've been misusing it the entire time. The word prodigal means someone who squanders, someone who wastes. If we don't know our vision, then we are prodigals. We are wasteful. We squander. When we know the vision to which God has called us individually and collectively, then we are those who wisely use all the tools at our disposal to strive for, to reach for, to attain, to live into the vision that God has given. Amen.